Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of mystery. Later on, an episode of It's a Crime, Mr. Collins, from 1956. But first, Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, with the Bride and Groom murder case. First turn on CBS on January 19th, 1950.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. Now for Mr. Keene and the Bride and Groom murder case. Our scene opens in a roof garden restaurant which is located atop a 14-story building in mid-Manhattan. The dance floor is crowded with gay people, while at a small table in the corner, a young man and his lovely young bride gaze out of the large window at the breathtaking skyline which is New York after dark. A skyline that is soon destined to become a backdrop for horror.
What a fascinating restaurant this is, Roy.
It's one of the most popular in New York, Olivia.
But look at that view through the window.
Yeah, there's a terrace that goes around the roof. It isn't very cold this evening. Would you like to go out and see what New York looks like at night?
Oh, I'd love to, darling.
Okay, let's go. Out this door.
Oh, Roy. What a heavenly view.
Yeah, this roof garden restaurant is on the 14th floor. You can see most of Manhattan from here. Oh. There's Central Park. And Broadway's over there. See the lights?
Mm-hmm.
You happy, darling?
Very happy, Roy.
This is one honeymoon that's going to last forever. Oh, great Scott, I forgot to phone my mother.
Well, must you do it now?
Oh, you know how mother is, Olivia. I'd better give her a ring at her hotel. Will you wait here on the terrace for me? I won't be long.
All right, Roy.
I'll make the conversation a short one.
Oh, I never dreamed the city could look so romantic at night. Roy? Is that you? What are you doing? What's the matter with you? No! No! Let go of me! Let me go!
When I returned to the terrace, Mr. Keene, there was a crowd there. That's when I learned that Olivia, my bride, had been pushed off the roof to her death on the street below.
Were there any witnesses, Roy?
Well, if someone had seen the killer, I wouldn't have come to you, Mr. Keene. The case would be an easy one for the police to solve.
But if there were no witnesses, young fella, how do you know it was murder?
Olivia would never have killed herself.
My partner, Mike Clancy, didn't mean it that way, Roy.
Maybe she slipped or lost her balance.
Well, that couldn't have happened. The railing around the terrace was several feet high. Besides, the police are almost certain it was murder.
Why, Roy?
Well, there was a slight drizzle in the air last night, Mr. Keene, and there were footprints near the spot where Olivia was standing. The police deduced from the footprints that Olivia must have struggled before she was pushed over the rail.
I see.
We'd only been married a week, Mr. Keene. We'd come to New York on our honeymoon. Olivia was the most wonderful girl I've ever known.
You mustn't let this tragedy ruin your own life, Roy. You're young. You've got to learn to live with your sorrow.
It would make it a great deal easier, Mr. Keene, if I could get my hands on whoever killed my wife.
That job will be mine and Mike Clancy's. Now tell me, do you or your wife have any friends or relatives in New York?
Olivia's half-brother lives here with his wife. Those are the only people we know in New York. My home is in Cleveland, Mr. Keene.
Have you seen your wife's half-brother recently?
Yes, he invited Olivia and me to dinner the night before last. We only arrived in New York on Monday.
Oh. While you were telling me the story just now, you said you left your bride on the terrace and went to telephone your mother. Does she live in New York?
No, but she arrived here yesterday. Mother's a buyer for a department store, and my father is dead. Mother's semi-annual buying trip to New York happened to coincide with our honeymoon.
I suppose the news of your wife's death shocked her.
Oh, Mother was terribly shocked, Mr. Keene. I've been worrying about her, too. You see, she just got out of a hospital.
Oh? What was wrong with her, Roy?
She was run down and needed a rest. But she recovered quickly and went back to her job.
I see. Now, is there anything else you might be able to tell us? For instance, did your wife have any enemies that you know of?
No, Mr. Keene. I can't imagine who would want to harm her. All I ask is that you put this killer, whoever he is, behind bars.
We'll do our utmost, Roy. Where are you staying?
At the Hotel Barrage. Mother's staying there, too.
And your brother-in-law, where does he live?
Elliot Warwick and his wife live at 975 East 60th.
Take that down, will you, Mike?
Right, boss.
We'll get in touch with you very soon, Roy.
Very well, Mr. Keene. Goodbye, sir. Goodbye, Mr. Clancy.
So long, young fella.
Goodbye, Roy.
Oh, sure, it must be a terrible blow to lose a wife, Mr. Keene. And on a honeymoon, too.
Yes, Roy Farnham's a very unhappy young man right now, Mike. I'll take it. Hello?
Is this Mr. Keene?
Yes.
My name is Elliot Warwick. My half-sister was murdered last night. She was pushed off a roof. It hasn't been reported in the papers yet.
I'm familiar with the tragedy, Mr. Warwick.
You are?
Your brother-in-law just left my office.
Roy Farnham, what did he want?
He asked me to investigate the case on his behalf.
He would.
How do you mean, Mr. Warwick?
Did he tell you his wife, my half-sister, was an heiress? And did he say that he only holds down a $60-a-week job?
What would that have to do with his wife's murder?
Roy Farnham inherits $1 million from Olivia. I called you myself, Mr. Keene, to ask you to investigate the case. If you could come over to my house now, I'll give you a few facts that might surprise you.
In that case, Mr. Warwick, I'll lose no time in getting over there. I have your address. Roy Farnham gave it to me.
I'll be waiting for you. Goodbye, Mr. Keene.
Goodbye.
What's up, boss?
Mike, that was Olivia Farnham's half-brother, Elliot Warwick. He implied that Roy Farnham himself might have killed his wife for her money.
Saints preserve us. Roy didn't look like that kind of a lad.
Well, we're certainly going to investigate. At the same time, it'll give us an opportunity to see how Elliot Warwick and his wife fit into this case.
Come in, Mr. Keene. Mr. Clancy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Warwick.
Jane?
What is it, Elliot?
Mr. Keene and his partner are here.
I hope we're not disturbing your wife, Mr. Warwick.
Well, she's been feeling irritable and out of sorts lately, but it's nothing serious. Jane, this is Mr. Keene and Mr. Clancy, the famous investigators.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you, ma'am.
You know why they're here, Jane.
Yes, Elliot. To investigate your sister Olivia's death. Well, I'm going to put my cards on the table, Mr. Keene, and you can take it any way you wish. I didn't like my husband's sister, and her death doesn't break my heart.
How can you talk that way, Jane?
Elliot, I'm no hypocrite. Olivia and I meant nothing to each other, and I'm willing to admit it.
You're very frank, Mrs. Warwick.
Mr. Keene, you'd have found that out yourself in any case. And I refuse to put myself in an embarrassing position.
To say nothing of a suspicious one?
If you're suggesting that I'm a murderer, Mr. Clancy, why don't you put me under arrest?
Oh, just a moment, Mrs. Warwick. You're not under suspicion. My partner and I only want your cooperation, nothing more.
Sure, and maybe I talked a bit out of turn, Mrs. Warwick. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right, Mr. Clancy. I don't believe I can help you, Mr. Keene. Perhaps Elliot can. If you don't mind now, I'd prefer to rest for a while. I have a splitting headache.
Go right ahead, Mrs. Warwick.
I'll lie down inside, Elliot.
All right, dear.
Your wife's face looks familiar, Mr. Warwick.
You may have seen her on the screen, Mr. Keene. She was a featured player in Hollywood before we married.
Oh, she's given up her screen career?
For my sake.
Well, Mr. Warwick, if you don't mind, I'd like a more thorough explanation of what you suggested over the telephone. You said that Roy Farnham inherits a large fortune from his murdered wife, Olivia?
Yes, Mr. Keene. Olivia married Roy only a few days before she was thrown off that roof and killed. Automatically, he becomes the heir to her estate, which is valued at over $1 million.
A $1 million estate?
Yes, Mr. Clancy. To make myself clear, I'm accusing Roy of having murdered my half-sister for her money.
Do you have any proof, Mr. Warwick?
Proof? What more do you need than that, Mr. Keene? He was with Olivia on that terrace at the Roof Garden restaurant, wasn't he?
That doesn't mean he pushed her to her death.
Well, I'm just telling you what I know. When a girl has an estate worth $1 million...
Mr. Warwick, did you share in that estate as Olivia's half-brother?
Why, no. It was left to Olivia by her father, who was my stepfather. We didn't get along. I moved from Cleveland to New York several years ago and lost touch with the family.
Your accusation is a grave one, Mr. Warwick. And in order to be fair to Roy Farnham, I think I must tell him about it.
I'm not afraid of him.
All right. Do you intend to leave this house today?
No.
Then I'll phone you later. I may want to speak to you again in Roy's presence. Come along, Mike. Please say goodbye to your wife for us, Mr. Warwick.
But just a moment, Mr. Keene.
Yes?
Nothing. I forgot what I was going to say.
Goodbye, Mr. Warwick.
Goodbye.
So long, mister.
Well, Mike, we've got something to work on at any rate.
Well, boss, do you think that this fellow Warwick knew what he was talking about? Accusing Roy Farnham of murdering his own wife?
We'll soon find out when we speak to Roy Farnham once more. Let's go over to his hotel right now.
Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy.
I'm getting in touch with you sooner than I expected, Roy.
Well, come in. My mother is here with me.
Who is it, Roy?
Mr. Keene and Mr. Clancy, Mother.
Mr. Keene, the great investigator?
I told you I'd gone to consult him about Olivia's death.
I'm very glad to know you, Mr. Keene, and you, Mr. Clancy.
Pleased to meet you.
How do you do, Mrs. Varnum? My reason for coming here isn't a very happy one, and I was hoping I'd be able to speak to your son, Roy, alone.
What is it, Mr. Keene? Do you have any news concerning Olivia's murder?
Perhaps.
You can say what you like in front of me, Mr. Keene. My son, Roy, and I have never had any secrets from each other.
In that case, I'll be frank. Roy, you've been accused of your wife's murder.
What? Like, that's insane.
Who accused me, Mr. Keene?
Your brother-in-law, Elliot Warwick.
Oh, naturally. Mr. Keene, he hates my son.
Does he, Mrs. Farnham? Why?
Because of Olivia's money. He knows my boy will inherit it now that she's gone.
Mother, let's not talk about that now, please.
Why not, Roy? We want to be honest with Mr. Keene, don't we?
I'm hoping you will be, Mrs. Varnum.
But Mr. Keene, Elliot Warwick was in the process of suing his sister Olivia when she married Roy.
For part of her estate?
Yes. He wanted to have his stepfather's will declared invalid, but he didn't get very far. However, now that his half-sister Olivia is dead, I'm sure he thinks he's got a better chance to share in her money.
I'd say he has a very good chance, Mrs. Farnham. But at the same time, he's going to try to make trouble for your son, Roy.
Oh, no. No, he can't do that. My son's innocent. And he loved that girl. He even loved her more than he...
Oh. Mother.
I feel faint. Please.
She's passing out.
I've got her. Mother, what's the matter? Mother... I'll carry her inside, Mr. Keene. Would you please call the house physician?
I will, Roy.
Mr. Keene, wait a minute. Look at this.
What is it, Mike?
This drawer near the telephone's half open. Look what's inside.
It's a revolver.
And a big one. Now, what would a young fellow like Roy Farnham be doing with a gun like this?
That's just one of the questions we're going to find an answer for, Mike, after the doctor treats his mother.
Mr. Keene, the famous investigator, and his partner, Mike Clancy, are investigating the death of pretty Olivia Farnham, a bride of less than a week, who was pushed from the terrace of a restaurant located 14 stories above the ground. At the moment, Mr. Keene and Mike are in the hotel suite occupied by the victim's husband, Roy, whose mother has just had a sudden fainting spell on hearing that her son may be implicated in the crime. A doctor has arrived, and after treating Mrs. Farnham, has left. And now, in the living room of Roy Farnham's hotel suite.
Has the doctor gone, Mr. Keene?
Yes, Roy.
I was afraid Mother had a heart attack, but I guess it was nothing serious. She seems to be much better.
She should be, young fella. There's nothing like a phony faint to get a chance to take things easy.
I beg your pardon?
What my partner, Mike Clancy, refers to, Roy, is what the doctor just told us. Your mother didn't faint. She only pretended to.
But that's fantastic. Mother was upset, Mr. Keene, because you were putting me under suspicion of having killed my wife.
Suppose we question her about that now.
There's no need for that, Mr. Keene.
Mother.
The doctor was right.
But why? Why did you do it, Mother?
I think I can answer that, Roy, with your mother's permission. By the way she behaves, I'd say she was very attached to you.
My son means more to me than anything else in the world, Mr. Keene. I only made believe I was ill to gain time for him to answer those terrible accusations.
Mrs. Farnham, was your last sojourn in the hospital another method of gaining time?
What do you mean?
Your son Roy told me you were ill and had to go to the hospital just before he was married. What hospital were you in, may I ask?
The Central in Cleveland.
Mike, would you get them on the long-distance phone?
Right away, boss.
Just a moment, Mr. Keene. Why do you want to call the hospital?
To inquire about the nature of your illness.
No.
But, Mother, there's nothing to be worried about.
Or is there, Mrs. Farnham?
Mr. Keene, I only pretended to be ill. I was trying to stop my son Roy's marriage to Olivia.
Mother, you don't mean it.
I left the hospital, Roy, and followed you and Olivia to New York.
Mrs. Farnham, you mean you were so angry with your son for having married that you came here to try and separate him and his bride?
Yes, yes. Roy is my son. He belongs to me. Oh, go on, arrest me, Mr. Keene. I was at that roof garden when Olivia was murdered. Arrest me for the crime.
Mother!
You phoned me at the hotel, didn't you, Roy? And you got no answer. Well, I followed you. I'd heard you mention at that dinner party that you intended to go to the roof garden last night, and I went there, too.
What dinner party are you referring to, Mrs. Farnham? The one the Warwicks gave?
Yes, Mr. Keene. Olivia's half-brother invited me, too. Well, what are you waiting for? I'm confessing to Olivia's murder. Why don't you turn me over to the police?
Because I don't believe you.
You don't?
Perhaps you were at the restaurant when your daughter-in-law was killed. But you'd have never murdered her yourself.
Why do you say that, Mr. Keene?
Because suspicion for the crime would have fallen on your son. And I'm sure you'll do nothing to get him into trouble. No, Mrs. Farnham. You're only trying to protect him now. And I want to know why.
Mother, why are you trying to protect me this way?
Be quiet, son.
Mrs. Farnham, unless you tell me the truth, I'll have to put your son under arrest for the crime.
Because that idiot Elliot Warwick accused him of killing Olivia for her inheritance?
And also because of a gun we found just now in that drawer. Show it to them, Mike.
It's as big as a cannon, mister.
Is that gun yours, Roy?
Yes, Mother, it is. But I have a license for it, Mr. Keene. I've carried it for months, for my own protection.
Has anyone threatened you?
I've had a hunch that trouble was in store for me. And
hunches don't count in a court of law, Roy. Jury might think you carried this gun to use on your wife in the event another means of killing her had failed.
Oh, no. No, don't say that.
Mrs. Farnham, I'm willing to help your son, Roy, if he is innocent. But you're hiding something from me, and I've got to know the facts.
Tell Mr. Keene everything, Mother. I have nothing to be afraid of.
Very well. Mr. Keene, the part about my being in the restaurant was the truth. Some insanely jealous reaction made me follow my son around wherever he went with his wife.
Go on, Mrs. Farnham.
I saw him go out on the terrace with Olivia. Then I heard a scream. I rushed around to the back of the terrace. Olivia had fallen to the street.
Did you see anyone else there on the terrace?
No, Mr. Keene, but I found something.
What was it you found?
It's in my handbag. I'll get it.
Mr. Keene, my mother didn't see me there on the terrace because I was inside making my phone call to her.
Yes, I remember you told me that, Roy.
She had complained of not feeling well, and I had promised to phone.
Mr. Keene, I'm trusting you with my son's life when I show you this. Here.
Well, it's a ring, boss.
Yes, Mike, a man's gold ring.
It has my daughter-in-law Olivia's family crest on it. I knew she'd given it to Roy. I found it on the spot where Olivia must have been standing before she was thrown from the roof.
Is this ring yours, Roy?
Oh, it looks like mine, Mr. Keene.
And your wife gave it to you?
Well, there were two rings like that in her family. One was Olivia's and the other was her half-brother Elliot's. Olivia had hers made larger and gave it to me to wear. But I can't imagine how that ring got into the restaurant. I lost mine 2 weeks ago.
But then, Roy, maybe that ring is Elliot Warwick's.
Sure, that excuse is a thin one, if you ask me, boss. Roy could have lost that ring, all right, when he pushed his wife over the roof and she put up a struggle.
That's not true, Mr. Clancy.
Let me see your hand, Roy. There's one thing I will say. This ring will lead me to Olivia Farnham's murderer.
Roy, he doesn't believe us. Mr. Keene doesn't believe us.
You, Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy.
Good evening, Mr. Warwick.
Well, did you accuse Roy Farnham of murdering my half-sister?
Yes, I told him you had accused him, and he in turn accused you.
He accused me?
What's he trying to do? Cover for himself?
Mr. Warwick, I understand you were suing your sister to break your stepfather's will.
Why, yes, but that's ancient history. I made up with Olivia long ago.
Because you realized your lawsuit wasn't strong enough?
I don't see...
However, now that she's dead, I imagine you'll bring suit again. This time against her husband, Roy Farnham, claiming a share of Olivia's estate.
I have more of a right to that money than he has.
Tell me something, Mr. Warren. Did Olivia leave any life insurance?
Not very much.
Just how much?
$50,000.
Not much, did you say? $50,000.
And who is the beneficiary?
He is, Mr. Keene.
Jane.
Oh, it's you, Mrs. Warwick.
Elliot, you may as well admit the truth to Mr. Keene. You're finished in this murder case.
How can you talk like that, Jane, about me? Your husband, the man you love.
The man I love. Don't make me laugh. I married you, Elliot, because you filled me full of lies. Lies about your inheriting $500,000. But it was your half-sister Olivia who inherited the money, and you knew she would all the time.
Is that true, Elliot?
Mr. Keene, I was madly in love with Jane, and I had to make her my wife.
Yes, at the cost of my Hollywood career. I quit pictures because of your promises, Elliot. And all I got were lies. Go on, Mr. Keene. Put him under arrest. He killed his sister because she made him her insurance beneficiary. She felt sorry for him because he was too stupid to hold a good job.
Jane, don't say that.
She left him $50,000 in insurance money.
I'd say that insurance was definitely one of the motives for murder, Mrs. Warwick.
Then why don't you arrest Elliot, Mr. Keene? He wasn't even home the night his half-sister was murdered.
And where were you, Mrs. Warwick?
I was at home.
Can anyone else prove that besides yourself?
Why do I have to prove it?
Because I have some very interesting evidence in regard to Olivia Farnham's murderer. Mr. Warwick, do you recognize this ring? I believe it has your family crest on it.
Why, it looks like the ring I gave to Jane.
It's a lie.
Well, don't you remember, Jane? Olivia had a ring like that, and so did I. There was a family tradition about those rings. We were each supposed to give them to our future marriage partners when we were engaged.
Then Roy Farnham had one too, Mr. Keene.
Yes, given to him by his wife. However, this is not the ring he received.
How do you know?
It's much too small for a man's finger. Mr. Warwick, let me see your finger.
That ring doesn't fit any of my fingers, Mr. Keene.
But I'll wager it fits your wife.
Don't touch me.
Now, take it easy, lady.
Mr. Keene, are you saying that Jane... that my wife...
I'm saying that your wife murdered your sister for the same reason she tried to blame the murder on you. Money. She evidently married you, thinking you were heir to a fortune. Then tried to make you one by killing your sister. Not only would you and she have gained Olivia's insurance, but the possibility of sharing her estate as well.
Don't come near me, any of you.
This ring came off your wife's hand when Olivia struggled for her life to keep from being pushed off the roof garden.
No.
You were very clever, Mrs. Warwick. When I first met you, you used a sly psychology. You thought if you candidly admitted disliking your sister-in-law and casting a slight suspicion on yourself, you'd disarm the authorities and me. Most murderers do everything they can to hide their guilt.
Jane, I can't believe it of you.
Your wife was worried when I returned here tonight, Mr. Warwick. And to save herself, she tried to pin the murder on you. All right, Mike, you can put the handcuffs on Jane Warwick.
Right, boss.
You'll never be able to take me to prison. Do you understand?
Boss, look out. She's picked up a fire poker.
Afraid of me, aren't you? Well, why don't you come and get me?
Mr. Keene, she fell through the window.
It's 9 stories to the ground.
Well, sure, that's justice for you.
Yes, Mike. Jane Warwick met the same fate she dealt her victim. You'd better go down there to the street. Meanwhile, I'll call police headquarters and tell them we found Olivia Farnham's murderer and the case is closed.
And so Mr. Keene finds the solution to the bride and groom murder case. Tracer of Lost Persons has been a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, on 2 and 2 yesterday from January 19, 1950 on CBS, part of the network's Thursday night lineup at 8:30. The program was the third highest-rated thriller drama on the air, behind the FBI and Peace and War and the Mystery Theater, drawing about 18 million listeners a week. This is an hour of mystery on 2 and 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for a syndicated episode of It's a Crime, Mr. Collins, with a broadcast called The Bullet Gray Cottage from 1956.
It's a crime, Mr. Collins.
It surely is. After all, even though my husband is a famous private detective, I get tired of men throwing bullets at his head and women throwing themselves. Yes, it's Gail Collins here, and I'll be back in just a moment to set the stage for our puzzling crime.
It's a crime, Mr. Collins.
I gathered from what you said a moment ago, Gail, your husband's life is a mixture of high-velocity guns and high-velocity women.
Well, it really isn't quite as bad as that, Jack.
Well, in that case, you must have had a particular case in mind, or a particular girl.
Yes, I did. I was thinking of Elaine Cheney. As Greg said, she reminded you of an expensive red high-powered car, standing at the curb with its motor idling. We saw her for the first time when we answered a telegram asking us to fly to an island in the Florida Keys. There was no reason, just a request to come. So, because we're in business, we went. When we arrived, we hired a car and drove to the place we'd been told to find, about 3 miles along the coast from the main town. And when we saw it, Greg just had to stop the car there and then.
Say, will you get a look at that pile?
You mean that's where we're going? To that place up there on the cliff, Greg?
Unless there's another castle along this road, honey. And if there is, the locals don't know about it. They directed us here.
Oh, Greg, it looks...
Yeah, that's exactly how it looks. Like something out of Wuthering Heights. Now, who'd want to build a joint like that? Except Cecil B. DeMille, I mean. And look how close to the cliff it is. You have to fall 300 feet before you get to your front garden. Oh, well, ours not to reason why. Ours but to make dough.
And live to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right. Funny how that joint makes you feel... That's going to be a battle.
A quarter of an hour later, we drove through the heavy iron gates of the house, along a gravel driveway, and stopped in front of the door of this fantastic, bleak, but somehow magnificent pile of stone someone called home. And as our car stopped, a man walked down the granite steps towards us.
Mr. Collins? Are you Mr. Collins?
If I'm not, my wife's traveling with the wrong man. Yeah, I'm Collins.
I'm glad you're here at last. Can't tell you how glad.
This is Mrs. Collins. Your name is...
Prescott. I sent the telegram asking you to come here. How do you do, Mrs. Collins?
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Prescott.
She means we came down here more or less in the dark, so we're both anxious to know what the deal is, Prescott.
I haven't time to tell you now. They're all waiting for us in the drawing room.
Well, that's well, but don't you think you should wise us up before we go...
I tell you, there isn't time. We can do all that later. If I don't get in there and talk to them, the roof's going to blow off this place. They've been here locked up together for 3 days. And there's murder in the air. That's the library, just ahead of us.
Prescott, I gather you're pretty worried, but can't you give us a clue why we're here? Who are you? Who owns this place? Who are they, as they say in the mystery series?
And what's all this talk about murder, as they say at an inquest?
I am the late Mr. Cheney's attorney. You'll have to forgive me. The strain. You've no idea what it's been like. You're going to meet them now. I ask you to say nothing, nothing at all, until I tell them why you're here.
Okay, this is your party.
Thank you. Now we'll go in.
And you think we believed you stayed here because you loved Uncle Janus? You hated him. You stayed because...
Roger, please. That's not necessary.
Here's Mr. Prescott. Don't stop him, Mr. Prescott. I find him most charming when he's in this mood. He amuses me.
Sometimes I could kill you for the things you say, Elaine.
If you can stop squabbling for one moment, I have some visitors I want to introduce.
Visitors? How nice.
Who are these people, Prescott?
These are two people who will be present at the reading of your uncle's will, Roger.
The Now, what right have they...
Allow me to introduce Mr. and Mrs. Collins. This is Mrs. Cheney, Mrs. Elaine Cheney. She's the wife of the late Janus Cheney.
Why, Mr. Collins, this is a pleasure. I'm very pleased to meet you.
Hello, Mrs. Cheney. How mutual can a feeling get?
And there she was, the high-powered sports model. When she saw Greg, she revved her motor a little. And Greg, the great dope, sat up and took notice. I stood on one foot to stop from kicking him in the shins. And Prescott went on with his introductions.
This is Mr. Roger Cheney. Mr. Cheney is the late Janus Cheney's nephew.
How do you do, Mr. Cheney?
Let's take the hellos for granted. What are you here for, Collins?
I never take anything for granted, Mr. Cheney. That's the story of how I came to get married.
He is here because I asked him. I wanted him to be present when your uncle's will is read, which will be now.
I'm not sure I like this. I've never heard of this guy before. Did Uncle Janus say anything about him being present?
If anyone has a right to object, I have, Roger, and I don't. You're going to read the will now, Mr. Prescott?
Now, let's sit down quietly. Mr. and Mrs. Collins, if you'll sit on the sofa.
Thanks, I've got a feeling I'm going to enjoy that.
I have the will here in my pocket. I might tell you all that I shall be more than happy to get this duty off my hands.
I think I know how much of a strain it's been, Mr. Prescott. But you must remember it's been a strain for us, too. Ever since you asked Roger and Nancy to come here 3 days ago, it's been obvious we all have something to expect from Janus's will. The only question is, what? It's made us all a little edgy.
Well, here's your answer. The last will and testament of Janus Cheney. I, Janus Cheney, being of sound mind and in possession of my mental faculties, do hereby will and bequeath. Firstly, to Nancy Cheney.
Nancy? What is she going to do with it? Why, she's not even here.
Will anyone tell me who Nancy is?
She's a niece, lives in England. To Nancy Cheney, the sum of $5,000.
$5,000?
I told you he was angry.
Together with my earnest advice to avoid my nephew Roger Cheney like the plague, until she's either spent it or secured it, so he can't get his hands on it.
Dear Uncle Janus.
To my wife, Elaine, I bequeath the sum and total of all my worldly goods, other than the bequest previously made to my niece.
What? What did you say?
He said all my worldly goods, Roger. All left to me.
The sum total of my worldly goods, other than the bequest previously made to my niece, upon the fulfillment of the following conditions.
Conditions?
I thought there'd be a twist somewhere. Uncle Janus was like that.
My wife, Elaine Cheney, will immediately have drawn up by my attorney, Guy Prescott, a will of her own, whereby my nephew, Roger Cheney, will become her sole heir in the event of her death from any cause whatsoever within 6 weeks of my death. If my wife survives this 6 weeks period, however, my nephew is to forfeit forever all claim to any part of my estate.
I don't get this.
Is that all?
Not quite. I further declare that during the 6 week period following my death, both my wife and my nephew must remain in residence in this house.
When that guy makes a will, he doesn't fool around.
6 weeks? We're to be locked up here together for 6 weeks?
That was your husband's will, Elaine.
I've just understood what that will means. The only way I can get my hands on that money, which I need very badly, is for you to die, Elaine. Die within 6 weeks. And that's something you're not likely to do of your own free will. Is it, Elaine?
If ever there was murder in a man's eyes, it was in the eyes of Roger Cheney. But keep your ears pinned, friends. We'll be back in a moment with more of our story. So now we knew why we'd been sent for, to keep Mrs. Cheney alive. And as Greg remarked to Prescott, it seemed a crazy assignment, because if anything suspicious happened to her, there could be only one person responsible, Roger Cheney.
That's your job to worry about things like that, Mr. Collins. All I want you to do is keep Elaine Cheney alive for 6 weeks.
But that will's an open invitation to murder. You don't think Roger would accept it, do you?
Don't ask me anything about the Janeys. They're all eccentric.
You mean mad?
I know what you're thinking. Would Janey's will stand up in court? There's always a doubt, of course, but I think it would. I believe he was eccentric, but not mad. Although...
Although what, Mr. Prescott?
In the envelope containing Janus's will, I found two envelopes. One was marked to be opened in 6 weeks' time. The other was addressed to me, to be opened now.
So?
His letter to me was just one line. Here, take a look at it.
If murder springs like Phoenix from night's black line...
Do you make any sense out of it? I don't.
Seems screwy to me.
I told you Janus was eccentric. But his nephew? I don't know. Maybe he's gone a little further along that road. Make no mistake. Elaine's in danger.
And what did the lady herself have to say about all this? Well, she seemed a little amused when she talked to Greg. Only when she smiled, her eyes stayed cold.
Well, you heard the will, Mr. Collins. In 6 weeks, I could be dead.
You really believe that, Mrs. Cheney?
Roger Cheney's capable of anything. Not only because that's his nature, but because he's hopelessly in debt. He's been counting on something from his uncle's estate, and now...
That's enough. You didn't waste any time poking your nose in, did you, Collins?
I've a perfect right to talk to him. He's here to protect me.
Protect you? Anyone would think I was a slavering beast or something.
No one's put that to me yet, Mr. Cheney, but there is this point. Why don't you leave this place?
Leave? Why should I leave?
Well, Mrs. Cheney here is pretty healthy. I don't think she'll die in 6 weeks.
But she might, Collins. She just might. And if I'm to collect, I have to be here. Here in this house. Have you made that will in my favor, Elaine?
I had no choice. Mr. Prescott made it out, and I signed it.
Thank you. You're very kind. I suppose that makes your ears twitch, Collins. You see, the scene's all set.
I know. With a hark and a hiss and a rotten laugh.
Exactly. Well, now, everyone's sure I'm going to be a murderer. You're sure, Elaine? And from now until the 6 weeks end, you're going to be afraid. You're going to keep away from me. If ever you find yourself alone with me, your pulse is going to beat a little faster. And if something happens to wake you in the night, you're going to lie there in your bed imagining. Yeah, imagining.
You've had your fun, Cheney. Drop it.
And if I wanted to kill Elaine Collins, what could you do to stop me? 6 weeks is a long time. Somewhere in that 6 weeks, a time could come when no one's on guard. You see, it must come.
You wouldn't dare. They'd hang you.
You've already pointed out I'm desperate for money. There's no saying what a desperate man will do.
That was a really lovely house to be in. 1 week followed another, and every day the tension was screwed up a notch. Prescott stayed on, looking like an undertaker waiting for a client. Roger and Elaine were like a couple of hungry big cats waiting for the other to pounce. And in all this, Greg went his own quiet way doing his job. He kept Mrs. Cheney under his eye all day. We moved our bags into an empty room next to hers and waited and watched and watched and waited. Tell me, Greg, do you really believe Roger Cheney's going to try to kill her?
I don't know. I don't like Cheney. It wouldn't surprise me if he was a little mad, but murder, I don't know. Come on, let's go down to dinner. If Roger Cheney's fixing to poison Elaine...
Oh, Elaine.
Well, I was going to say, if Roger Cheney fixes to poison Elaine, I'd like to be there.
So we went downstairs to dinner. And you didn't have to be a weather vane to tell which way the wind was blowing. With less than a week left of the 6 week period, the storm was ready to break.
Afraid there's going to be a storm tonight. I'd close my windows tightly if I were you, Collins.
We're getting into the hurricane season, aren't we?
That's right. Anything might happen.
Anything at all. Lightning, wind, thunder, even murder.
Do you have to talk like that? Give it a rest, Roger.
Why shouldn't I say what's in everyone's mind? Murder, murder, murder! That's what you're all thinking.
If someone doesn't stop...
Mrs. Cheney!
I tell you, I can't stand any more of this.
Elaine, you're upsetting yourself for nothing. Roger doesn't mean you any harm.
Leave her alone. Let us sweat out the fool.
6 weeks.
Can't you stop him, Mr. Prescott?
I can only appeal to him, Elaine.
Appeals will do no good. You see, I like to see Elaine writhe.
That'd be nice in a nightclub, but here it seems sadistic. What have we got against her, Cheney? Just the money?
That's one reason. The other is that she's not a Cheney. Yeah, I think I've had enough of this company. Oh, you're relieved that I'm leaving the table, Elaine?
Yes, I am.
Don't be too happy, my dear. You're not safe yet. You haven't collected my uncle's money yet. And you won't.
Oh, boy, listen to that storm.
What's the matter, Greg? Can't you sleep?
I think this place has finally got me, honey. I'm all wound up like a spring and don't know what's wrong all of a sudden.
It's the place and these people. I wouldn't use them to scare my children.
It's more than that. Tonight, anyhow. I've got a feeling in my bones, and it's not arthritis. Here, have a cigarette.
Oh, not now. I've cleaned my teeth.
I keep telling myself Roger Cheney would be crazy to try anything. But then I tell myself he is crazy anyhow.
Oh, Greg!
It's okay, honey. The window's blown open, that's all. Prescott wasn't kidding when he said that...
Roger!
Gail, can you hear? That's Elaine.
Oh, Greg, be careful.
That crazy Cheney. He might have known he couldn't get away with this.
Greg, she stopped screaming.
That's great, and we're locked in. Mrs. Cheney, the door. Unlock it, will you? The key must be on the other side.
He tried to kill me. He came into my room and tried to smother me.
Gail, come and get her. She's fainting.
Okay, Greg. I got her.
Look after her. I'm going after Cheney. Did you see which way you ran when he left your room, Mrs. Cheney?
You don't have to look for Mr. Cheney, Mr. Collins.
Mr. Prescott, he tried to kill me.
He won't try it again, Elaine. He's lying at the bottom of the stairs. With a broken neck.
And that's how it was. Roger Cheney had run out of Elaine's room when she screamed, tripped at the top of the long stone staircase, and killed himself. And that seemed like poetic justice. A would-be murderer who killed himself. A couple of hours after the tragedy, we gathered in the library, waiting for the dawn and the police. Outside, the storm still raged. Inside, Elaine did her best to stay hysterical. Mr. Prescott looked like an undertaker who'd found a client. And Greg? It was only then that I realized Greg wasn't around. Mr. Prescott, have you seen my husband anywhere?
I beg your pardon? I'm sorry. I was thinking.
Greg, he's not here. That seems to be a failing of your husband, Mrs. Collins. He wasn't around either when that...
Elaine.
It's okay, Mr. Prescott. She doesn't worry me any.
No need to upset you any more than necessary, my dear.
You seem to be very worried about what Mrs. Collins thinks, Prescott. What about me?
Now, Elaine.
The fact is, you don't like me. Well, I'm not asking you to. I'm not asking anyone to like me now. Now, Mrs. Cheney? Yes, now. I'm a rich woman, Mrs. Collins.
I didn't think the young fool would do it.
Greg! Where have you been?
Hello, honey. Been looking for me?
We all wondered where you'd gone to all of a sudden.
That's me looking around. How do you feel now, Mrs. Cheney?
Oh, fine. I'm used to being almost murdered every night.
Yeah, that's a funny thing about people. They can get used to almost anything.
Well, I don't care what anyone says. I find it hard to get hold of the fact that Roger Cheney tried to commit such a stupid murder. That shows how little you know, Mrs. Collins.
You know, I had the same feelings about your nephew. I figured he was sadistic and all that. I mean, the way he teased you about how he might murder you, but, you know, I didn't really think he'd try.
You already know what I think about you as a detective, Mr. Collins. Prescott, when Collins' bill comes for protecting me, tear it up. He didn't earn his money.
I shall not be handling your affairs, Elaine. Make your own arrangements.
I see. Very well. Suit yourself.
Oh, Mrs. Cheney, I got a word of advice for you. Don't get rid of a good lawyer like Prescott too fast.
No? Why not?
You're going to need him. When you face a rap for murder...
What?
When I... What?
When you face a murder rap, pal. Because... When the cops get here, they're going to charge you with the murder of Roger Cheney.
Greg said it just like that, nice and quiet. Elaine had murdered Roger.
Well, in a moment we'll bring you the climax of the case. When Greg accused Elaine of murder, you could have dropped an anchor in the room with no effect. Everyone was stunned. And then Elaine began to laugh.
Oh, really, Mr. Collins. You're not a good detective, but you're very original.
Collins, take my advice. Be careful what you say. She's a vicious woman.
Sure she is. She had to be to murder Roger Cheney. But she was cute about it, too.
He tried to kill me. He fell down the staircase when he ran out of my room.
You want to know why he fell? Because of this.
Let me go. You've gone mad.
Collins.
That's okay. I've got what I wanted. It was in the pocket of Elaine's robe.
A piece of rope?
It comes from the Venetian blind in Elaine's room, and it was stretched across the top of those stairs.
What utter nonsense. It came down in my hand when I drew the blind tonight.
Take a look at the end of the rope. It's been cut.
Prescott, stop him. You can't stand there.
I'm not your lawyer anymore, Elaine. You said so yourself.
You tied this rope across the top of that staircase. You arranged to meet Roger in your room tonight.
No.
When he came there, you said something like, "Wait here while I lock Collins in his room." You did that, and at the same time you rigged up your booby trap.
You can't prove a word of this. Not a word.
Then you went back to Cheney, talked to him for a second, and then started screaming. Cheney thought you were trying to frame him, so he started to run. He ran out of your room, took a swallow dive over that rope. You untied the rope and then unlocked my door.
I knew he wasn't a killer.
Take a look at it, Prescott. If that's not the face of a murderer, I've never seen one. And what about the way Cheney was supposed to try to murder her, with a pillow smothering her? You ever tried to smother anyone without doping them first?
You'll never prove it. You can't prove it. Roger hated me.
Sure he did, and he wanted your husband's money. But there was an easy way to get it, pal. All he had to do was go to court and prove Janice Cheney was of unsound mind, and that wouldn't be hard. Did he tell you that tonight, Mrs. Cheney? That he'd started proceedings to break the will?
No.
Isn't that how you got him up to your room to discuss a little deal? Then you screamed and the poor guy ran.
You won't be able to prove a word of this. Not with the lawyers I'll be able to hire. I'm a rich woman. Do you realize that? A rich woman.
Rich? Elaine, if you're banking on money from Janus's estate, forget it. There's no money.
No. No money? Well, of course there's money. He was rich.
You were an extravagant woman, Elaine. You spent all Janus's money before he died. He even mortgaged this house to give you money. And there's none left.
You're lying. There has to be money.
There's none.
There has to be money. I fought for it. Struggled for it. Roger was going to take it away from me, but I stopped him. There has to be money, I tell you. There has to be.
Once she had started, and once she realized there really was no money in Janus's bank account, Elaine Cheney kept screaming until she told the whole story. The police didn't need to make out a case. She gave them a confession. She sounded as though she didn't care. So, a week later, Greg and I were flying back to San Francisco.
Greg?
How did you guess that Roger Cheney had decided to contest the will on the grounds that his uncle was insane when he made it?
Well, I figured it out. With me there, murder was out of the question. If Roger Cheney didn't go to a room to murder her, why did he go?
She must have invited him.
He wouldn't have gone within 10 miles of that dame without a good reason. In my book, there was only one good reason. Janus's will.
Brilliant. Positively brilliant. And, you know, I thought you liked that woman.
Yeah, I got a crazy wife.
Greg.
Mm. And, but you know something? The man who really solved this case was Janus Cheney.
Huh?
That's true. He knew Elaine pretty well. His eyes were wide open.
But how do you mean he solved the case?
He wrote a one-line letter to Prescott, and it said, "If murder springs like Phoenix from night's black loin..."
Go on.
That's all. You see, he knew if anyone died in that house, it would be Roger. That's how well he knew the fair Elaine.
I don't get it.
If murder springs from out of night's black loin, death is alive on the other side of the coin.
Huh?
In other words, not Roger, not the one we all expected to kill, but the one on the other side of the coin. Elaine Cheney. That bit Janus Cheney wrote is from a poem.
And you suspected her simply because you knew the second line.
Well, I knew the second line, but I didn't know what it meant until too late, until Roger was dead.
Greg, you're wonderful. You even know poetry.
Oh, what's poetry, anyhow?
What's poetry? Why, it's a rhyme, Mr. Collins. Don't go away. In just a moment, we'll be back with you.
Well, folks, Gail and I hope you enjoyed our adventure, the Red Hot Mama. Be sure to visit us next time for another Puzzle in Murder. For whether it's crime and romance, there you'll find Mr.
and Mrs. Collins.
It's a Crime, Mr. Collins. On Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from 1956, bringing the curtain down on this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.